Welcome to Drivers Talk Radio, hosted by automotive expert and championship-winning race car driver Rick Titus. Join Rick and his team for informative and entertaining discussions geared for automotive enthusiasts and consumers alike. Enjoy in-depth interviews with industry leaders and influencers. Now, originating from its studio headquarters in Las Vegas, it's time for Drivers Talk Radio and your host, Rick Titus.
And thank you so much for joining us. My name is Rick Titus. As you've already heard, this is Drivers Talk. We're coming to you from the Quad Resort and Casino right here on the Las Vegas Strip. And obviously, if you're in town, we would love to have you stop by our studio, which is in the middle of the auto collections right here inside the Quad Resort. In fact, if you go to the auto collections, theautocollections.com, you can, in fact, print out your own pass to get in here for free. That'll save you $12.50 a head, so that's worth doing. 250 collector cars. It's an awesome setting. Great place to have a radio studio. Of course, joining me in studio is Tracy Miller, producer and co-host of the program. How are you holding up?
I'm holding up great. I'm trying to get myself prepared for SEMA.
SEMA. Yeah, that's going to be 35 miles of aisles, pal.
Yep, I've been on my tread climber preparing.
You did working, good?
Yeah, working on new tennis shoes.
You know, the whole secret's shoes.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah, don't wear wingtips, brand new wingtips. My first year, I was in bloody socks by midday. That was a huge mistake. Crawled out to a cab and had them drive me to a discount shoe store so I could buy some black sneakers like everybody else was wearing, even with their suits.
Well, as we've told our audience before, and we'll tell you again, 35 miles of aisles.
Yep.
A lot to see. So, and it's not just the 35 miles of aisles. You are continually back and forth and up and down the aisles.
You're chasing around. Here's what's interesting about SEMA. First, before we jump in there, let me introduce Spencer Crick. He's our engineer. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing great.
You know, we had Haggerty on last week, I believe it was, and we were talking about different collector cars, and I know you were hurt that the Scion box wasn't.
I was so disappointed.
I could tell.
That wasn't
I saw the
mentioned.
Look on your face when he was going down the list of over what? What did he say?
There was thousands
of collector cars, and the Scion B hadn't made that list yet. And yours being particularly rare, one of those 4x4s, which I've all but never.
You got to know a guy.
You well.
Wait, 4x4 SUV.
SUV. That's right. I forgot it was an SUV.
And
as
when
well.
He mentioned SUVs being in that category,
and you and I fell out of these chairs laughing.
Yeah.
And the collector SUVs.
Right.
That shocked collector the heck out of me.
But you know what? I never thought about the
But when he listed what they were,
the Scouts. Who
the
would
Scouts
have considered the Scouts?
And the FJ crew. We've got a mutual friend of Bill Zoe's.
Yeah.
The FJ. The first Land Cruisers,
yep,
very, very popular. I'll bet early Land Rovers were very, very popular. As you can tell, we're in a live audience situation, folks, and, of course, they're coming on by. And we like that very much. Having said that, of course, early Broncos is part of that list as well. Yeah. So, but Scion, I'm sorry, my friend, did not make the cut. So for you Scion owners who think you got something pretty special going, give it time. Lots of time. But
decades,
you know what's interesting
maybe.
Is every once in a while I'll still see a really clean Saturn.
You know, it's funny. I had one pass me yesterday, and it's like, wow, that thing was in great shape.
You know, people take really good – I mean, no, I know they love their cars. They're kind of like the previous Saturn or Scion owners. Some of these Saturns look pretty nice.
You know what it was? The impervious plastic body panels.
That's true. Bulletproof.
Yeah.
So bulletproof that in hot weather you couldn't even open the doors. No, that's a rumor I started because it was true on an experimental Firebird situation. But Firebird is long gone, so it's not really an issue. Hey, coming up in this episode, we're going to be talking about news, going to talk a little bit about racing. We've got several contests, not least of which is our book club, sponsored by Motor Books. And, of course, this week we're giving away, did you say that, Cerro Scotty?
Cerro Scotty.
Cerro Scotty Travel Traders. So interesting. This whole travel trailer phenomenon has been pretty amazing. And if you trace its history back, the truth is the evolution has not been all that sensational. Travel trailers in the early days pretty well nailed it.
They did. They really have not changed a whole lot.
They haven't.
More creature comforts now.
Right.
But they got it from the very beginning.
They really did. I mean, in terms of the packaging space, size, in fact, in some ways, some of the compartment was actually more clever, I think, in some ways. Now, they didn't have microwaves, and they didn't have side-by-side refrigerators or big generators like we expect today. But this is one of the companies. This book is all about their travel trailer history, up to and including even the advertising in it. It's a great book. Paul Hitch, we think, is the name.
Hecht.
Paul Hecht is the author of this book. This comes from Motor Books. What will happen is you'll go to our Facebook page. You'll answer our true-false question that we'll be asking near the end of the show. You first to do so and get it correct, guess what? You'll beginning. Cerro Scotti Travel Trailers, a complete history of the light trailer movement from the Scotty Way, as they referred to it. And, of course, it talks about the teardrops, and it talks about everything that they've done. They did some real innovative things. In fact, I now see that Vista Cruiser ripped them off.
With the pop top, yeah.
With the pop top. Very good, Highlander. Very, very clever stuff. So, good book. Obviously, we'll also be getting you involved in our Racer's Edge contest. Racer's Edge is a driving school, competition driving school, out of Southern California, Rosamond, California, to be precise. And they've agreed to give away one free day in their race cars with instruction over there in Southern California. If you go to our Facebook page, like us, and identify the race car photos we have there on the next several weeks. A photo a week will be going up. If you can identify the race cars, pay close attention. In some ways, the question answers itself.
We guarantee this is going to be a lot simpler than what it was initially.
You know, the first contest, we got a winner out of it, but boy, we had to search high and low. That was a little tricky. We got a little caught up in the moment.
Yes, we did.
Put up some photos that were very, very hard to identify. These are a lot easier, particularly if you're a race fan and know you're racing at all. Just look closely at the photos, and guess what? It should be pretty easy to come up with
actually,
the answer.
So. We're still seeing a couple of the race cars that are actually
still
in those
here,
photos.
Actually, yeah. Yep. Maybe you would see them on the... Oh, that's... You know, you just gave away a big tip, because if you go to the website for the auto collections, it actually gives a little profile on some of these cars, does it not?
It does, as a matter of fact.
So, who knows?
Huh.
Who knows? Okay,
good
that
clue.
Said, on the news front, of course, we want to talk about the fact that I just noticed Ford's EcoBoost Police Interceptors outrun Chevrolet's Caprice V8 and the Hemi Dodge Charger in a Michigan State police testing.
I saw that.
So their little that little EcoBoost is doing its job, man.
Yep.
Plenty of speed, plenty of performance. And I tell you what, we mentioned this last week about the taxi business and how aggressive a number of companies have become. Chrysler, GM, of course, Nissan, Toyota, Ford, everyone trying to get into that business because that's a lot of cars that get ordered, a lot of vehicles get ordered. But the vehicles have become very task-specific, no less true with these police cars and some of these emergency services vehicles and community vehicles, very task-specific. And so now, I mean, designs are just completely different than you would sell in a retail marketplace up to and including even the taxi.
Well, and a lot of, we're talking about police vehicles now, a lot of those police vehicles are not necessarily pursuit vehicles. So
right.
A lot of those being used around town, whether they're detective vehicles, you know, community type vehicles that are going from, you know, the police department over to a community service vehicle, they don't need that high performance engine. So a lot of those vehicles are now being downsized
right.
with smaller engines.
Well, they're all becoming the scale of economy regarding fuel mileage is a big thing, but it's very interesting. Until you get involved, you don't realize how special the demands are for police vehicles.
Yep.
Not only for its the electrical capability of the vehicle. I mean, they'd love to have 40 volts if they could get it because they've got so much electronics on board. I mean, so much electronics on board, computers and cameras and radios. There's just a lot going on there. And then, of course, the special equipment that police officers wear and the way they need to get in and out of the car so quickly, the seat design, door opening, how far they open to handle that. Is that called a brownie? What is that?
Sam Brown. Sam Brown belt.
Yeah. Because of the stuff that's on that and the ability to get to the shoulder harness, be able to reach tactically the computer, to reach the radio. Man, I mean, it is a very specialized market because those guys have very specific demands.
Well, specially designed seats now to where their gun belt actually drops down into the
seat.
Exactly,
the relief
hit.
There. Yeah, it's a whole different gig. And even the second row doors, you know, Ford's Taurus actually carried this over into their production cars, the door opening further so they could get the perks. I love that word. Get that perk in there, perp or whatever they're called, get them back in there fairly easily. Well, they decided, well, if it works for that, why wouldn't it work for the general public?
Right.
So they changed the door hinge design as a result of working with the police department. So, and of course, we've been involved with some of the testing and job work. Of course, a big buzz about the Texas State Fair, still very, very, still being talked about and all the things that went on down there. That is a very, very big event in Dallas. We've had the privilege
it's
of going
huge.
To
We've
it.
We've been down there, yeah.
It's a huge, huge event. It's taken very seriously, and nothing but good news. Of course, speaking of Texas, the Circuit of America is that new track just outside of Austin, Texas. Starting to get a lot of use now. We got Formula One coming there this weekend, and of course, gosh, we got vintage races happening there now. The Indy cars are going to be going there next year. There's just a lot going on with that. So,
hey, and speaking of Ford, they are preparing for what they're calling Vandemonium at SEMA coming up here in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be having 57 customized vehicles, which we know Ford always has a huge display of vehicles up in their display area.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty anxious to see what they're going to have up there. Very unique stuff that we've seen in the past. Kind of curious to see what they're going to go with this year.
Well, and that won't be, for fear you think we're turning this into an all-Ford show, that will be true of everyone. I mean, we're going to see some very exciting concepts that may be, in fact, even closer to reality than what we're going to see in just a couple of weeks following that over at the LA Auto Show. Of course, I think we're all kind of hoping to see the Cadillac El Mirage at LA.
Oh, yes, we are.
Gosh, I'm hoping that concept car is there because it just looks stunning, and they are being pushed hard to manufacture that car. Very long a nose, very sexy lines. I think it would send a message to Europe that, guess what, Americans not only have good taste, they know how to build a good-looking vehicle.
Yep.
I think it would be one of the best-looking cars out if we can make that happen. So that would be pretty exciting if we can push them into that. Gosh, this business is so busy. On the racing side, of course, the Wing.
Oh, now the being Delta sold. Wing?
Yeah, the Delta Wing, and of course there's another version of that car from some of the engineers who were associated with it that are now on their own. A lot going on there to see what's going to happen at IMSA next year with these cars, now as coupes.
Yep, the coupe is very sexy, and they've got the electric version of that coupe out now.
Yes, I see that. After an intense 8 months of development, design, and construction, Nissan's revolutionary Zero RC electric race car was unveiled today at the headquarters of Nissan Performance at Nismo in Yokohama, Japan. This will be a pure on electric. This is going to be interesting.
So, with Formula E coming up,
right?
Now we have the electric Delta Wing. This is all getting pretty interesting to see whether or not we're going to have more futuristic electric racing coming up.
You know, let's back up a second. You kind of got to give Audi credit here because they were the first to go to diesel in these endurance race cars. And others have now followed that. And then, of course, the hybrids Toyota brought to Le Mans this last year. And now you're right. You were seeing more hybrid and more electric, more diesel. Mazda, big breakthrough with diesel this year. Won seven championships, I believe, with just their Skyactiv diesel engine and a number of endurance races. Very interesting to see what's going on with diesel. And, of course, a lot of manufacturers betting on it. They can sell diesels in the retail marketplace based on people's desire to get more gas mileage.
Well, and I think that goes back to the race on Sunday, sell on Monday. I think that's going to pertain to the diesel market.
Yes, of course. What they don't tell you is you got to spend a ton of money in advertising to make that actually happen.
Exactly.
But kind of interesting. Hey, you want to hear the numbers? Do we have time for the numbers?
We got 1 minute.
We got 1 minute. You know, I don't think I'm going to try and force feed a whole bunch of numbers. Remember, a little later in the show, we are going to do our Motor Books contest for our book club to see if you can win the new Cero Scotti Travel Traders. This is a really retrospective of this company that started building travel trailers of different sizes and makes when travel trailing was really a new infancy. And a little later, we're going to ask you a question about where does it stand today. It's an industry that's still highly visible.
Oh, there's a huge following in this now with a lot of active members as far as retro, you know, using a lot of these restored travel trailers.
Well, you see
now.
This with the Airstreams.
Oh,
you see this with a lot of different trailers, and these clubs have become very, very popular. So that said, we're going to go to break right now. AMFM listeners, we appreciate being with us. For those of you joining us online, stick around. You get to see what happens in between things. That said, this is Driver's Talk. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Driver's Talk. Rick Titus, Tracy Miller, Spencer Crick, and, of course, a friend of mine on the line, a friend of ours, if I dare. No bias involved. This gentleman needs no real long introduction because most of you know his name. That, of course, is Steve Saleen, a gentleman that we've had the good fortune of working with as friends and partners and teammates in the past, and someone we have privately rooted for and publicly rooted for some time now. There's a lot of good news to share, not least of which what he is currently up to, and the best news of all, for those of you didn't follow it closely, he had lost control of his own company by a couple of, well, I guess I can say the mean things he can't. I didn't care for the gentleman who power-throwed him. The good news is he's got his company back. Saleen belongs to Saleen as God intended, and doing the kind of things he's famous for doing, and that is bringing really exciting cars to market. With that said, calling in his office there in Southern California is our pal, and that is Steve Saleen. Steve, thank you so much for taking the time, buddy.
Well, thanks, and it's good to be part of the show. So.
We love that. We love that we have kind of the kind of access to you that we get because of our longstanding relationship. Having said all that, big announcement at Monterey at the Historics in August. I was so excited to read this, and of course, I've known for a long time. Not only were you a participant in, but had great respect for the Trans Am series, and you decided to do a legend cars, tribute cars to three key names coming out of the Trans Am. You want to talk about that, pal? Because it has generated a buzz.
Yeah, we've obviously yeah, with our past experience, Rick, you know that the Trans Am racing in the 60s and early 70s probably influenced me immensely, and watching the top drivers of the day race Mustangs, Camaros, Barracudas, Firebirds, and all of that really had a big impact. And it was, I think, one of the best eras of racing ever was. And we had the opportunity a few years ago to actually, you know, start to participate in that when we announced that we were doing a special edition of the new Mustang, but converting it into, based on the Parnelli Jones winning the Trans Am Series in 1970 with the orange Boss 302, and we were able to do what I'll call a tribute car that was very successful on that, and then and having Parnelli participate, and actually personally, it was at Riverside at the Mission Bell 250 race watching all these cars run. And after the Parnelli, we had the opportunity to do another replica car with Dan Gurney on a Mustang that Dan drove, the number two Mustang, which a lot of people probably weren't as well known as that Dan actually drove a Mustang on doing that. But was a big influence on that. And then before we talk about the three, I would be missed if I didn't refer to, actually, Rick, your dad driving really the first one and winning the championship and having there was a new book that just came out that I got on Mustang from Donald Farr that has a full page picture of the picture that we shot of the Terralinga Mustang, which was yellow, white, and black, and then the Mustang that you and I drove, which was yellow, white, and black.
It was
with
awesome.
You standing in front, and representing, if you will, the Titus family with your dad and yourself on that, and then Carol Shelby and myself in the back, and that's in one of the major pages in the Mustang book. And so that's what kind of started the whole series. So I know Trans Am has always been dear to your heart, as well as mine. And so those three really got us moving in the direction. And we were able to kind of, what I'll put together, since I've regained the control of the Celine company, we've been able to put together, if what was always planned before I left was the whole Heritage Series. And at Monterey Laguna at the historic races, we announced the George Fulmer edition Mustang.
Good.
Which we showed in person, and with George in attendance with us as a replica of his 1969, which, as I recall, he actually won more races than Parnelli did in 69. And we did a red, white, and black, which was the first year that Ford introduced the Boss 302 Mustang. And we've tried to copy that as close to the detail as you possibly can get as a tribute to that. And then we also showed the announced that the series wouldn't be complete without having the Mark Donohue Camaro. And since we're doing Camaros now as well,
right,
is that we then announced that we were doing the Mark Donohue Camaro as a replica of his when he won the series in 1969. And so we announced that, and we had David Donohue, his son, as maybe many of your listeners know, is that Mark died in 1975, I believe, in practice in a Formula One over in Austria. Mm-hmm. And but we were fortunate enough to have David Donohue, who we've competed against, and as a accomplished race driver of his own, was in attendance and endorsing the product from the family standpoint as well. And then we also gave the a rendering of what we're doing, and we are one of the most iconic cars that hasn't been done, and that we're in a position to do it, is that we're also doing the Barracuda. And And we wanted the fastest guy that had that, and that and actually ran the whole series was Swede Savage. And again, I sound sort of like an obituary here in the, saying that, you know, Swede unfortunately died in a fiery crash at Indy mm-hmm. in 1972, but we were fortunate enough to have his wife, Cheryl, and his unborn daughter at the time of his death, Angela, as our guests at Monterey 2, helping to endorse the Savage connection with the Barracuda. So doing the Foamer Mustang from 69, the Donahue Camaro from 1969, and the 1970 Barracuda of Swede Savage, from my standpoint, we actually complete the whole aspect of it, because if you look back in time at the Mission Bell Trans Am race, which was at the end of the season in 1969 and 70, the top five drivers happened to be Parnelli Jones, George Foamer, Dan Gurney, Mark Donahue, and Swede Savage. And so from my standpoint, we've completed the whole heritage of that era.
But here's what I want to do, Steve. Let me interject here, because I don't want people to think you're building race cars. What you're talking about is limited edition collector cars that are a tribute to these great names from that era of racing that are going to be real pride of ownership for the people lucky enough to get these cars from you. Where can they learn more about these specific cars, Steve?
Well, the easiest is to go on our website, Saleem.com, and you know, when you go on there, you can easily navigate through the website to find out all the information on each different model. Is probably the best way to do it. We are doing a limited run. It's only going to be 250 of each of them will be made, and then the mold will be thrown away.
Awesome.
So it's a very, we're talking a very collectible and a very limited run. The 250 is because most Trans Am races were run 250 miles, and the one we've tied in specifically was the Mission Bell 250 out at Riverside.
Nicely done.
And so we tried to kind of take a lot of the historic detail and make it appropriate for each vehicle.
Here's what we're going to do, Steve. Real quickly here, we're going to go to break. The time goes fast so fast. We have so many questions we want to ask you. We're going to go to break, come back, and do another segment with you. But I want to say that, ladies and gentlemen, you need to go look at these cars, because in terms of graphic interpretation and the kind of taste that has made Steve Saleem, I think, a bit of a legend, you need to go look at these cars, because he really knows how to put the really finishing touch on something graphically. These cars were of themselves a bit of a standout graphically, but Saleem really knows how to take the extra mile. With that said, we're going to come back from break, more with Steve Saleem about where the company's headed, projects they're up to, and things we look forward to talking to him about. And, of course, maybe over the SEMA show we'll get him over here as well. That said, this is Driver's Talk. We'll be right back. Thanks for being with us. And welcome back to Driver's Talk. On the line with us, a special interview with a special friend of ours, and of course is Steve Saleem. Yes, that's Steve Saleem. Former teammate, longtime friend and associate of mine, of course, friends of everybody on this staff, and of course we're talking about these very special, really tribute and tip of the hat to the Trans Am era, really at the height of its game, and that was 69 and 70, absolutely top of game seasons. Every driver we talked to from that series back then says it was the height of motor racing in this country. Very challenging stuff. Steve and I have had the good fortune to be teammates and friends with both Parnelli and with George Foamer. This Foamer car, Steve, I'm looking at the specs here. This thing's not weak-wristed at 470 horsepower. What were you thinking, dude?
It really, you know, the modern technology really has been able to take, you know, if you will, the best of both worlds, the racing world and what we can actually drive every day as a street car. And we've had a lot of fun on the specs. We've taken, again, to stay true to the heritage of the vehicle, it's a 302 cubic inch Ford V8, but we've increased the horsepower, and we've kept it normally aspirated. A lot of our cars we've supercharged, but on this one we've kept it normally aspirated, but we've increased the horsepower and the drivability immensely by basically redoing the top half of the motor. And what I mean is from the shaker hood that is reminiscent of the 60s, that's functional, into the intake. We've changed the intake, and we've changed the heads, the valves, and valve springs and camshafts, which wow. allows us to rev the engine literally another 1,000 RPM higher than your normal run-of-the-mill Mustang. So you're at about a 77,000 or 7,700 RPM red line.
That
extra 1,000 really makes a big difference in the response and the horsepower that we're able to get out of the engine and still be very trackable to drive every day in downtown LA traffic.
Well, let's talk about the other two standout Saleen technologies, and that, of course, is your ability to set up a car, which I've had the good fortune of benefiting from that because we raced the same car together in those endurance races, and your chassis work is, legendary. And, of course, your taste in graphics and the finishing details, Steve, these are two areas you're renowned for, your racecraft suspension and, of course, what you do graphically as well. Let's talk about that. I have to assume you've played with the suspension on this package.
Yeah, we've actually taken it a little bit further in that we actually have a fully adjustable race-style suspension on it from the shocks and that adjustability. And then also to be true to the car and the air, but also to improve the overall handling, like you cannot believe, is we've added a Watts link on the rear. And the Watts link basically helps the overall suspension and is really allows the tires to do most of the work and pick up the grip on the road on all sorts of type of pavement. That really gives you a lot more traction than what you normally would expect out of these cars, and so we spent a lot of time with that. And then, as you mentioned, we have the right style with the front fascia and the air dam. We've added the rear spoiler in the back, the scoops on the side, reminiscent of 1969. We've redone the hood. To make it authentic in that period of time, and we've added the window slats, which a lot of people, if you remember, it has the what I'll call the Venetian blind look on it. And you can remove it; it's easy to take off if you have to wash your car or whatever. But it also helps add to that period in time.
Absolutely dead right. Steve, I've heard a rumor. I hope I'm not letting a cat out of the bag. If I do, I'd like to apologize on behalf of our 900,000 listeners. And that, of course, is that you are now going to be a publicly traded company. First of all, is that fair to talk about? And can we share that?
Yes. It's a couple months ago, we were able to complete reverse merger, and which means that basically we are, as we speak today, a publicly traded company. Mm-hmm. We trade under the symbol of SLNN, people can actually, if you like the products, you can actually go and own a piece of the company as well. We're obviously starting off small, but we're very excited about the future and some of our products, and certainly encourage people to look at it.
Steve, let me ask you at this juncture, are we going to a dealer or do we directly contact you to get one of these legendary Trans Am cars?
We can do it both ways. If you went to Saleen.com, mm-hmm. You can be on our website and make a contact with it, and we will help based on where you are in the world. We will help get you in contact with a Saleen dealer. We're in the process of establishing dealers primarily in the United States, but really also on a global basis. And you'll have a dealer really within your audience. I think you'll have a dealer not too far from you that actually you can order the car or have a service there and whatever works out best from the customer that's owning the car.
Now, is it a drop ship to you? Is that how's that done, Steve? What happens?
No, we have the cars. All they do is order at the retail price of the cars. It's one price. It's $74,995, and there's no options. They all come complete with every option you could get on the vehicle, and even down to one of the details that was kind of cool. that we showed at Laguna is that certainly we have the floor mats that say, on the George Fulmer, it has the insignia of George Fulmer on it and that. But if you pick up the floor mat and you turn it over, what you find is you have the outline of the racetrack that George won in 1969. And so he won at two events, Bridgehampton, New York. So we have the outline of Bridgehampton on the passenger side, and he won at Riverside that year, and we have the outline of the Riverside racetrack.
You know, Steve, I'm not trying to be maudlin here, but first of all, two of your three cars are drivers that were killed in motor racing, and the two tracks you have outlined are now both gone. Steve, so I know you and Liz love going to haunted houses and stuff, but this is starting to get a little spooky, my friend. George Fulmer, I just saw Rush. I don't know if you've seen that movie yet. Have you seen
yes,
that?
Yes, of course.
And it was so reminiscent of the way Fulmer and Parnelli were on our team when we were working with them. The two different approaches, two different personalities. George is so much fun to work with. You can kid him so hard, and he will kid you right back hard. Of course, then he'll ask for money right after you kid him. But now there's a book coming out on Fulmer. Of course, a book comes out that mentions you and I quite a bit on Mustang, which I really appreciate, and my father, of course, which I appreciate. Kind of interesting what's going on right now, Steve. I think the stars are aligning in a lot of ways, my friend.
Yeah, again, we're dealing, as you mentioned before, we're actually dealing with the latest technology. These cars are not yesteryear. These are the quickest and the best handling, the best looking cars that literally you can buy today.
Right.
But they're a tribute to yesteryear. And I think that it's important. If you don't, you certainly will not know where you're going in the future if you don't have an understanding of where you've been. And I think that's one of the things that I really like about bringing these type of cars back and updating them into today's technology is the fact that we can pay a tribute to yesteryear, but in a way that you get the best of both worlds. And it's really been a lot of fun creating these cars. And I'm sure that, I know with both the Parnelli Jones and the Dan Gurney ones that we've already done that have sold out, is that the owners of those have the stories that they tell me and the experience that they have driving and owning the cars has been surreal, and it's and these three will be even more exceptional.
Well, that said, my friend, I know how deep your respect goes, and I've always admired that about you, a man who believes you can learn from history, not just to ignore it, and of course, appreciate and respect it. That said, we did not press you for some secrets we know you've got coming. I will not fib to you. Come SEMA, we probably will press you a little bit, but ladies and gentlemen, we look forward to having Steve Saleen on in person here at the studio. Steve, thank you, my friend, for taking the time.
Rick, the only other secret that I was going to tell you is if you read back or remember back to Sears Point, turn 9, that was flat and forth.
Yeah, thanks, my friend.
Okay, I just want to let you remember that.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. That said, Steve Saleen, hey, buddy, God bless. Look forward to seeing you at SEMA.
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Please say hi to Liz and to, of course, Molly for us. We appreciate that.
Very good.
Take care,
Mel.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, there you have it, folks. We're going to go to break right now. That was Steve Saleen. More from him later. And, of course, we appreciate being with us. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Driver's Talk. Rick Titus, Tracy Miller, and Spencer Quick. We are, of course, coming to you from the Quad Resort and Casino here in the center of the Las Vegas Strip, right across the street from Caesar's Palace, actually. We sit amongst the auto collection. You've heard us say this before, 250 collector vehicles. And in all fairness, a fair portion of those rotate all the time because these cars are actually for sale. It is the largest showroom, if you will, for cars that are for sale of this vintage anywhere in the world. Of course, it's quite a diverse group. If you live in Las Vegas, you're listening to us on 920 AM The Game. We appreciate locals paying attention to our program. That, of course, is an ESPN talk show, sports talk show, and has a very large following. We appreciate that. Supporting us on that show are, of course, some local car dealers that we appreciate their support very much. And that, of course, is Godden Ford, Team Ford, and, of course, Chapman Dodge Chrysler. So we appreciate that very much. Having said that, dealers are very important to a community. You know that this show is pro-dealer. And to that end, you've got a piece you just picked up.
I do, out of Silver Spring, Maryland, and hopefully I say his name right, Alex Perdikas has a dealership there. It's a Ford Lincoln store. And when the whole government shutdown occurred, he decided he was going to do something different. And for his customers that came in, for any of the furloughed federal workers, he decided to open his doors to those furloughed employees and basically lost $25,000 to $30,000 by offering tire rotations, oil changes, inspections on their vehicles. Just because they couldn't pay, he wasn't about to see their vehicles go down the drain. Kudos to him for being able to do that.
And that's the kind of thing, I mean, that's where, you know, it's funny, people like to pick on a dealer. Of course, you ask them why you're picking on the dealer, they have no real good response to that because they don't really have a reason, just kind of myth or hearsay. But there are a lot of good-hearted dealers out there doing great things for their community. Trust me, you don't want to lose a dealership. Your town would recognize it almost overnight, the impact they have if they ever went away.
Actually, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try to get a hold of him and see if we can get him on. I'd like to talk to him a little bit. See what kind of response
he gets.
Wow,
you're going to talk about going above and beyond. No. Hey, in motor racing, I had the good fortune to be a professional race driver for 5 years. And I was often asked, you know, are these the stiff competitors? Are these the best drivers in the world in these kind of cars? These were production-based vehicles. And I said, well, there's no denying the cats that we're racing against are very, very good. But to be honest with you, in the amateur ranks, there are some guys out there so hungry, so determined to get to this level, I would almost be more afraid of some of them than I are these pros because amateur racing is really the feeder zone to top professional road racing in this country. Every year there's a thing referred to as the SECA, Sports Car Club of America, runoffs. They've been rotating the tracks as of late. This year they went to, I believe it was Road America, and I gotta tell you, they had 701 cars show up, and it's only for the top three points getters out of each region of the country. So the turnout was huge. They brought back a lot of famous pros now that started in the SECA runoffs and the regional national series to get their way up there. And even those cats are saying, wow, these kids are hungry. Wow. These kids are good, and some of them not all that young. But nothing but good news to see that happening. Now, in the last portion of this segment, we are going to give away Sarah Scotty Travel Traders. This is a great book on kind of the history of that company and the early travel trailers they did in the late 40s and 50s, even into the 60s. Great book, even has some of their old ads. It's very interesting because there's a very linear behavior, and we'll get into that more in just a little bit, in terms of travel trailers today and travel trailers when they were first invented.
Well, I've had an interest in that. I've had a couple of vintage travel trailers.
Not
a Cerro Scotty, but I've had a couple of those.
You know, a lot of people are familiar with Ricky and Lucy towing one across. That kind of got travel trailers a lot of attention.
Actually, the movie was The Long, Long Trailer.
The Long, Long, because that was a monster too, by the way. Of course, they were the perfect ones. Hey, Honda designers, the head Honda designer in Japan is saying he wants another Sports 2000. He wants another S2000 in their lineup, a vehicle of that nature, two-seat, relatively inexpensive sports car that he wants to bring back as a performance piece because, you know, the Acura NSX is coming back, such is the rumor.
Really?
Yeah, I know.
What
decade? Exactly. Well, allegedly, but I think it might be true this time. And he thinks that there ought to be something else in the mix. So kind of interesting.
Yeah, that would be something to see if it did.
Yep.
Hey, go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, we talked last week about Volvo and their quest to have new battery power in vehicles and doing that in the door or in panels.
Actually
on vehicles.
Using parts of the car as panels, yeah.
Yeah, but now they're talking about Volvos being able to talk to Volvos. And this is going to be interesting to see. You know, we've talked about this recently, hadn't heard from Volvo in a long time.
Yeah, they went underground with the sale and everything that now.
And now all of a sudden, just Volvo technology seems to be sprouting from everywhere, but they're talking about Volvos being able to talk to Volvos themselves. Whereas some of the car companies are saying cars can talk to cars, but they're saying if they can specifically talk to their own brand of car, this is going to be kind of a safety feature out there on the highway. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go with this.
You know, what's so interesting about Volvo is they basically went, I said underground, they basically just went silent, even though they were still producing product. But, you know, they didn't just come back in through the door. They kicked the door open with their new concept vehicles, some of the breakthrough technologies that they're wrestling with. This is a company that's due for a very strong resurgence, I think. And if they produce some of the cars, because Volvo's traditionally looked like the box a really good-looking product came in, guess what? They will be the good-looking product inside the box now.
And then, ironically, not too long ago, I saw there was an article, some journalist who said cars that are going to go away probably in the next decade, and Volvo was on that list.
He guessed wrong.
He was wrong.
You know, we talked about, you know, has there been an economic turnaround? Is the country getting stronger financially? Is there improvement? And cars is one of the earliest places to test that or see that. Now, where cars are different than houses is cars become a kind of replaced by need. You don't have to replace your house necessarily, but there comes a cycle time where, yes, you would love to replace it sooner, but more importantly, there comes a time where you need to replace it, either to gain more fuel economy, to gain more safety, to gain more reliability. It depends what's going on with it, where you're at. And to give you an idea what the numbers look like right now, 9 months into the year, we're at 11,773,000 vehicle sales. To give you an idea how that compares, that's in 9 months. Last, well, in 2010, it was 11,589 total sales for the year, million. So we're already 200,000 ahead of where we were in 10.
For total.
And that's at 9 months. So kind of interesting there. As of September, 15.3 million. I'm not going to bother with that number. But 27 months in a row in which U.S. sales have risen year over year before the September. September kind of declined for some reason for sales.
Well, I just saw yesterday that production numbers were up in September for the sixth time this year. And they were up 24% in the United States.
Right, and I have that same 24% number here. In fact, some are saying that it could potentially be greater. The difference is, though sales were down in September across the board for everybody, and I would maybe vacations ending or people taking them before school went back in, but production was up because October, November, December are predicted to be up again. So a lot going on there. $1,000 is the average cash incentive General Motors is offering on its newly launched, already $1,000 incentives on the 2014 Chevrolet Silverado, despite all the hype of how great that vehicle is. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Dodge in the pickup truck business has made strong gains.
Yes,
strong gains. The pressure will now be on Ford to introduce its new F-150.
Well, you know, it's secular in the business, but Ford right now has the oldest truck out in the industry, so it's time for them to launch that new truck.
Yeah, new truck, and that, of course, that'll get the game going all over again. Chrysler is having a very strong resurgence. They're doing great. They're up, 42 months of Chrysler Group consecutive year-over-year sales gains. 42 months. Boy, getting in bed with Fiat had its payoff, despite the fact that only 50% of the Fiat dealers out there are profitable, and there's a lot of upset dealers over how Fiat's handling its reintroduction, up to and including where's Alfa Romeo going to go. If you're a Fiat dealer, do you automatically become an Alfa Romeo dealer? A lot of strange behavior there. It's going to be very curious. Fiat's doing great, particularly here in Las Vegas. Tobin Fiat here and Findlay Fiat doing very well. Tobin being the number one Fiat dealer in the country. Mm-hmm. So Fiat sales strong in different places depending on what's going on. So what you got? Should we get to our book club question? Should we get to our Did You Knows?
How about Did You Knows? I got one.
I got several. Let's talk about it. Did you know at 60 miles an hour, or you're covering 80 feet of pavement a second? 88 feet of pavement a second, to be honest with you. At 60 miles an hour, you are covering 88 feet of pavement a second. Keep that in mind when you're tailgating somebody. 14 gallons of water a second. That's the average Formula One race tires water pickup and launch. That's so 14 gallons of water a second at top speed on a Formula One car per tire. And there's, if it's going well, still four tires on it. Though in the rain, that can get reduced to two or one in a hurry. So you got to be kind of careful. And, of course, let's see, Formula One, 68 mile per hour. I have no idea what my second one was going to be.
Okay, I've got one for you. Did you know that in 1963, this one pertains to Cerro Scotti Trailers.
Okay.
1963, Scotty Land was a 230-acre campsite located in the scenic maple sugar country of Pennsylvania's Laurel Highlands. It was set aside for exclusive use by Scotty Travel Trailer owners only.
Son of a gun, really? You got one you want to inject here?
Did you know we have a YouTube channel? And did you know it's getting even more active? Hey. Yes, that's right. I'm adding every week now walk-around videos that me and Tracy have been shooting.
So you're launching our YouTube channel. I guess we're out of the closet on that one, huh? All right. Well, that's an interesting did you know. Did you know that a Formula One car can drive upside down on your ceiling at 68 miles an hour? That's how much downforce, that's how much vacuum they're generating underneath those cars, that when it's at 68 miles an hour, it could literally go across the ceiling of this showroom. Not bad, eh? Not bad. Hey, speaking of Sarah Scotty, should we go ahead and give that book away? What do you think?
Yeah, I have a question here for it.
Whoa. Okay, in that case, go for it. What's the question to win this week's book club sponsored by Motorbooks? Go to motorbooks.com. Anything automotive, camping, tanks, trailers, airplanes, they've got it. And they're our sponsors for our book club.
Okay. All you have to do is go to our Facebook site, like us, and answer this question. True or false? John Sarrow built his first travel trailer in his garage in 1956. True or false?
That's an interesting question. And of course, you probably found that answer somewhere in this book or found out that that answer wasn't right.
It either could or could not be true or false.
Yeah, I have a hunch the years of Weigler there. Go to our Facebook page, hit like us, answer that question first, get it right, and guess what? Miller Books will send you this book from this week's book club contest. So good stuff there. Racer's Edge, well, here's what we want you to do. Racer's Edge is a racing school based out of Willow Springs Raceway in Rosemont, Southern California, just north of L.A., about 130 miles. Having said that, they use RX-7 sports cars as their training vehicles. They are full-on competition race cars. In fact, I suspect most of them have some competition background.
They do.
You know you're an instructor there at that school. And Racer's Edge is giving away one free day at their racing class, i.e. there'll be classroom. You learn some of the base physics of what goes on in a race car. By the way, it also goes on in a street car. And, of course, you can win that. Go to our Facebook page, identify the race cars each week over the next 3 weeks, and you could win that school for free. That said, very packed show. This is Driver's Talk. Thank you so much for being with us. We wish you open roads and safe motoring.